Welcome to the Style Frame Saturdays podcast. I'm your host, Caroline Lee. Join me as I take a deep dive into the wonderful world of style frames and interview those who are industry wizards when it comes to this stage of the animated production process. For those who may not know, style frames are pieces of creative that are developed during the pre-production phase of an animation project, and they help creators and clients alike get an idea of the overall style of a piece. Sometimes the initial vision is carried through to the end, and other times it ends up on the cutting room floor. During this podcast, we'll discuss projects of all shapes and sizes, and the challenges, rewards, and lessons learned while developing what I like to call each guest's favorite frame. Before getting into the details of today's show, the Style Frame Saturdays team would like to give a quick shout out to Riverside FM. Riverside is the tool that we use to develop this podcast, and it simply wouldn't exist without it. Its effortless ease of use and amazing support team are some of the many reasons why we're such huge fans, and we've got a link in the description for anyone who's interested in checking it out. So now that you know how we're getting this podcast to you, let's dive into episode 4. Today's guest is a motion design maven. She's one of the founders of Boxfort Detroit and also the organizer of MoGraph Mondays. She's worked on a vast range of projects over the course of her career, including the 2019 half-res titles, music videos, explainer pieces, and so much more. Not only does she create visuals, but she creates music as well. Talk about the whole MoGraph package. We're thrilled to have her on the show today and talk all things motion design. So please help me in welcoming today's guest, Julie Kraft. Hey, Julie, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. How have you been?
Good. Great. We're at Boxfort in Detroit.
Very nice. Studio. So for anyone who doesn't know you, maybe we'll just jump right in. Would you mind telling our audience a little bit about yourself? You know, how you got into motion design and animation, the kind of work that you're doing, freelance staff. I know you just mentioned Boxfort, where you're based out of, just a little bit about your journey.
Yeah, you bet. So I'm in Detroit. I've always been in Detroit. Never really lived anywhere else. I was born in Detroit, actually born in Detroit, the city proper. I live in the suburbs now, as do a lot of people, but I was actually born here. So that's like my cred, I like to say.
Very cool.
I've been in Detroit for a while. Really quick background is I started using After Effects in 2001. So,
oh, wow.
I grew up with Grayscale Gorilla and Video Copilot, Andrew Kramer, I was working at Comcast, which is like a cable company. Not everyone knows it. It's a big cable company. And like they had like an internal production department that did local cable commercials and whatever stuff. So anyway, a freelancer came in. I was a production coordinator. Freelancer came in using After Effects, doing like the lightning effect thing.
Oh, cool.
And I was like, that's amazing. I want to learn that. And so I started learning After Effects. I was already interested in video. My high school had a TV and radio station. So I already like did some nonlinear editing and even linear editing on like the reel-to-reel things and stuff. So I had some experience with that. Even a little bit of graphics experience. We had like a video toaster thing. So right off high school, I had that. And after high school, I went to this local like kind of trade school, Specs Howard, which is more like for broadcast and news stuff. But they did have Avid stuff there. So I learned, editing. I started to learn like nonlinear editing.
Right, right.
Whatever. So, So then I got to Comcast and I worked there for a few years or like 5 years. And like I said, I started using After Effects and was just self-learning from, Andrew Kramer a lot at the time. Before we had the explosion of... This is before motion design was actually like a career path, right?
Yeah.
So I was, doing that. Self-taught. And so then, I started learning that. So I got better. I just kept going doing animation stuff. They moved me into a graphics position, et cetera, et cetera. And then I, worked at some smaller studios locally. And I eventually ended up working at like a technology and interactive company here in Detroit. And that was cool because I was still doing like animation graphics and some video editing and shooting, like kind of doing everything. Mm-hmm. But they did like games and a little bit of AR, VR and stuff. So I got to make some assets for some iOS games and learn a little bit about the interactive side of things. They eventually got into VR, which is cool, and a little projection mapping. So that was a really nice introduction to like kind of the other side of the industry.
Sure.
Over time I was like, oh man, I don't think I can, I'm like not happy working anywhere. So I made the, decision, like, I'm going to go freelance. And I basically planned out 6 months ahead. I'm like, okay, I got, you know, this money cushion, whatever. This is the date I'm planning to go freelance. So yeah, I put in my notice, whatever. I already had stuff booked before I even went freelance because I had been contacting everyone like that I'd worked with previously at different studios and agencies and be like, hey, if I go freelance in, you know, 6 months, a year, would you have worked for me? Or if you don't, like, keep in mind, like, it'll be happening. Like, I'll be around. Mm-hmm. And that really worked out to put out those feelers like ahead of time. Mm-hmm. Because then I had work right away and that was great.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I always tell people. Because jumping to freelance, like, it's, like, so scary for everyone. And it's really hard to understand it until you do it. And it's really hard to even do it until you've totally quit. Because you can sort of moonlight for a bit. Mm-hmm. But when people want to book you freelance, they want you 100%. So
yeah, no, for
it's crazy
sure.
Jumping off point.
Yeah,
but absolutely. Yeah, so, yeah, set a date, planned it. And I've been freelance ever since. That was in, like, 2013. And then in I've been freelancing since 2013. And then in 2014, I started MoGraph Mondays, which is a local meetup here in Detroit. we've been paused for COVID, of course, but we did it for 5 years straight, pretty much up until the pandemic.
Wow.
And yeah, it's been like once a month, ended like last Monday of the month. And we got a pretty good community, like, due to that. And then different studios like Gunner and Hobbs and other studios, Lunar North, that we have around here. So we have a pretty thriving community, despite how, like, you know, we're like a mid-level city or whatever.
Yeah, no, there's a ton of creative coming out of Detroit right now.
Yeah. And I'm just bragging that I really built up the community because I had those meetups and stuff.
So MoGraph Mondays in Detroit, that's is that an offshoot of what Liam started as well? Or is it just the fact that you both have like the same
exact name? Liam is the offshoot of me. Well, Liam was doing a MoGraph Mondays in his city, yes. But that's kind of been paused. But so MoGraph Mondays is my thing. Of course, Liam's got his own stuff. And Liam had a Monday meeting.
Oh, Monday meeting. That's
I don't know if
was.
That's still going on. Yeah, but Liam was doing a local MoGraph Mondays, like, kind of like chapter thing.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. I know it sounds familiar. And I'm like, MoGraph.
Yeah, I know.
Again, the name MoGraph is in a lot of stuff.
Because, yeah, School of Motion puts out the Motion Mondays emails.
Yes.
Liam and Mark do a Monday meeting. I do MoGraph Mondays, and you do Style Frame Saturdays, and we're all a bunch of goofballs.
They're all just taking a bunch of days out of the week to just, like, talk about motion design.
I always call Sundays Slow Graph Sundays because it's like, don't work.
I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's my background. And then now here I am freelancing. And I have Boxfort, which is where I am now. I'm in a little, like, recording booth area we have. And this is a studio space that, it's just a bunch of freelance friends. We share space and we all do our own work here, but it's nice to have the collaboration around you know, to look at stuff. And we haven't done any projects as a studio. We did do the titles for Half Res in 2019 as a group, you know, as pro bono, but that was a really fun group project.
Cool.
Yeah, so we're like a freelance collective.
And so at Boxfort, did you guys know, all know each other before you came together as a collective? Like, did some of them work at Comcast with you or...
No. So there was a group of them that went to a local community college.
Oh, cool.
And that group of people, like, they all knew each other. And then they started coming to MoGraph Mondays. And that's how I got connected with them. And they kind of became, like, the core group that was always showing up. I was like, oh, you guys are, like, always here. What's your deal? I really started connecting with them because they were just always around. They were the most, you know, participatory in the community because we had different people share projects every month and everything. And they all wanted to do it and do, like, the banner graphics and the monthly event graphics and all that. So... yeah, we all just became close because they were just, like, really involved and really part of the community building. So that was really great.
Very cool.
So that's how I got to know everyone here.
Wow.
That's part of Boxfort now.
Yeah, and so Boxfort, when did that form again? Did you guys officially form?
2017.
Okay, wow.
We signed the first lease. We're on our second building now. We were at another building for a couple
that's
years.
So cool.
Yeah. So we're in Detroit, kind of like north of the main downtown area. I don't know for anyone who's been here. And and it's cool. And right now, Gunner and Hobbs, their space is across the street.
Oh, very cool.
In a temporary space. And then they are actually building a new space that's in, like, the same kind of plaza area we are. Mm-hmm. We have, like, a courtyard in the middle. We have a bakery and a coffee shop below us. So it's like our little creative campus. So we hang out with, it's like us, Gunner and Hobbs. It's like a definite little, like, creative campus community thing. So we all see each other a lot. And that really helps feel the community in Detroit a lot too, because we just run into each other.
Right, exactly. No, that's so nice. Oh man, yeah, that sounds like a ton of fun to just kind of be around yeah. all these creative minds like all the time in like such a close proximity as well. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
Yeah, that's us.
And it's a bunch of freelancers, right? I think you had mentioned yeah. that. Okay.
Very oh yeah. Cool. So Boxforce freelance. We have like, well, we will have people that probably work remotely and do full-time job stuff, or we will soon have some people. But right. Mostly it's freelancers. Yeah.
Very cool. Yep. Very cool. Yeah. Well, I'd love to jump into the main event of the show with you. Now knowing a little bit about your background with, you know, Boxforce and MoGraph Mondays and, mm-hmm. you know, the type of work that you do. So yeah, if you could tell us a little bit about the piece that you selected, that would be awesome.
Yes. So what's intriguing about you asking me to be on Style Frame Saturdays is like, I don't make style frames that often, or quote unquote style frames, right? I kind of jump into the production right away. I don't often end up doing pitches. I end up working for studios, and et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. But yeah, I was looking for like some client work. And then my friend was like, oh, why don't you just show the personal project you've been working on? So yeah, this is for a personal project. And I made this first frame like almost to the day today, a year ago.
Oh,
so
wow.
Part of this is I want to show how this has developed over time, like incubating in my head and stuff. So.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So I made this one like NFTs started being a thing. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'm going to make NFTs. Yeah. All right. This is before I like knew what was up. And I'm not going to share my opinion on that, but you know, people have opinions on NFTs. I don't know if you've known this.
Yes. Conversation, a completely yes. separate conversation for another yeah. podcast episode.
Opinions
right?
exist.
Exactly.
Opinions exist. So yeah, I was making this. I'll make this an NFT, whatever. So I never ended up making an NFT, and I never quite got it to where I wanted it to be right away. So I kind of paused on it for a while. And then over the past year, like I've gotten more into like electronic music. And like house music and stuff. And mm-hmm. I've been doing like some synthesizer music and stuff. So I made a song. I've made a few songs, but I have one song I definitely want to release. And I thought, well, I should do like a music video for this song using that piece and maybe a couple other, you know, shots from it, from that same area, from that same like scene I made. Because I love like VJ stuff where it's kind of like repetitive animation, but different sound driven mm-hmm. things happen. So I was playing with this and I was thinking like, oh, this could be like a looping shot that I just, it was kind of repetitive, but I do different crops of it and movements and like light pulses and whatever. So yeah, I started thinking about that. So over time, just, you know, like in amongst client work and whenever I kept developing it. So the first thing people kept saying was like, it like feels too small. Like, cause I started with this square frame cause I thought I'll put it on Instagram or I'll make it an NFT.
Right.
And people were like, and every time I would like zoom in, they're like, oh, that looks better zoomed in. So moving on to the next frame, I cropped it, you know, and we're like, and kind of like my friends here at Box, where everyone's like looking at you, cause I'm like, oh, help me. What's wrong with this? Like, oh yeah, it looks way better cropped, you know? Like, okay. You can already see in between that frame and the first frame, those rings on the outside are getting more detail.
Mm-hmm.
Those like lit rings that are orbiting the big center thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just kind of kept iterating and like versioning it, you know,
mm-hmm.
and the debris and all that. So yeah, so I zoomed in there. I was like, okay, yeah, it looks way better cropped, even though I wanted to show like, oh, I have this whole big space of stuff. But you know, it's always like you're holding on to something, but like people who see it from the outside, they don't know what's in there. They don't care. They just care about like what they're seeing. The result, you know, they don't know what led up to it. So it's
right.
like, okay, I had to like let go of my original idea and my original like hope and dream.
Right.
To achieve something better. And that's what helps with the collaboration and people showing people your work. And
for sure.
Right. So yeah. So we got to the next frame. And this is like loosely based on like I've read all the books of Dune, the Dune series.
Okay.
And near the end of that, no spoilers, I guess. Well, the history that you learn early on in Dune is that like computers, what they call thinking machines, are outlawed because the AI went nuts and, you know, typical storyline, you know, AI went nuts and so they can't trust it. But whatever, the AI like escaped and made their own planet. And the planet, the name of the planet's called Synchrony. And one thing you find out in the books is that like the it's kind of like a big cityscape, like maybe like Coruscant from Star Wars, but everything just like keeps moving and shifting,
mm-hmm.
all the shapes and stuff. So that's actually what my intent was here.
Very cool.
You won't see it moving because these are just style frames, but
right.
the whole surface of that planet and those rings, all those like kind of spline wrapped rectangles, they all move and the lights blink and like it's all this big shifting thing. Okay, and that's what it'll be once I release it. And who knows when that'll happen.
Very cool.
Taking me forever. But yeah, so that's that. So I kept putting more detail in there. Now, another thing people kept saying, let's see, where am I at here? One second. Okay, I'm slowing up. All right, so if you look at the third frame, yeah, so actually I cropped it a little more. That's the third frame there. Mm-hmm. I think I was just playing with the crop a bit more. But on the fourth frame, it's kind of where it's ended up after like a lot of time. And this was just rendered like, you know, a month ago. So a lot of feedback people were giving, if you go back to the third frame to the fourth frame, mm-hmm. You'll see the inside that opening in the planet. On the third frame, you'll see it's like kind of empty. And people are like, oh, just like it feels small. Like this thing doesn't feel like big, like, you know, Starkiller Base or the Death Star, you know, from Star Wars. It feels mm-hmm. like it just feels like there's just like a hole cut in it, you know. So I kept saying, like, put stuff in there. And I didn't quite get it at first. I'm like, what do you mean? But then I played with it a bunch. And you'll see on the fourth one that, yeah, there's all this detail in there. If you zoom in there, you can see it. And, like, that just adds to the scale of this. It helps it feel like, oh, this is big. There's, like, a city inside.
Yes,
right?
That's so true.
And that's, like, a weird, hard thing. And I definitely was looking at pictures of Starkiller Base from the new Star Wars and kind of seeing how that was and how that was made. And I was like, oh, yeah, how do you just see an image and get a sense of scale with no reference, right?
Right.
You know, like you're in space, there's stars, those are kind of a reference. But mm-hmm. with space, it's like a sense of scale is a huge thing. And that's something that my friend Billy Chitkin is really good at. His latest NFTs are like all these like big spaceships. And he's really good at like making it feel huge, right? Mm-hmm. And overwhelming. And I really love that. So yeah, this is where I've ended up with the look of this and the style. And like, it's crazy how, like, over time this is incubated and, like, I've been thinking about it and I just, you know, leave it alone for a while and come back to it. You know, because it's a personal project, I have that ability and right. that privilege to, like, just let this incubate for a long time. I mean, I do want to release it someday, but, you yeah. know, it's just, like, it's a testament to, like, how, like, it is not just about cramming hard and doing dailies and, like, doing art every day. Sometimes it is like letting go and letting it incubate and coming back to it, you know?
Exactly.
So I'm all about, you know, having multiple projects and shifting between them rather than just like slamming hard on one thing. It depends on your personality. Different people have different, you know, ways of doing things. But that's like right. how I see it.
Very cool.
And what's crazy is like, as I get older, you know, I really think about like, so let's say like when I started, let's see if I get my hands on the camera here. When I started doing art, you know, MoGraph, whatever, I was like, output. All that matters is output. Output is here, you know. And what happens to me if I like don't sleep, whatever, that's who cares? You know, I don't care about the process. Output, right? Results. And like over time, like my like feelings and so forth, like I still want it to be good. But like, you know, I've learned to like compromise. Like, okay, it doesn't have to be like amazing. Let's say just short of perfect, right? Because we're all perfectionists. So I'm like, we can never get it all right.
Yep.
Let's say just short of perfect. But like this has shot up a lot where it's like the process matters to me so much more than just the result. I want the result to matter. But for me, it's like become way more like, how does it feel to me as I'm doing it? Do I enjoy this process? You know, am I burning myself out? Or is this personal project a refreshing thing?
Right.
I mean, and more so, you know, for client work too, I apply that. But, you know, it's more like my own personal work, you know. I don't even want to do it if it's too hard, quote unquote. Like, I don't want to do it. Like, right. I don't want to spend all this time on a thing that, you know, I'll care about, but other people will only watch once
and
whatever.
And it's funny you say that, you know, like the process over time has meant so much more and more because, you know, at the beginning of this episode, you were also saying too that, you know, like, I don't do a whole ton of style framing. You know, I kind of just jump into the production, you know, process aspect of it kind of thing. But you know, you can really see that, like, you're really paying close attention to, like, all the detail in that process of building out these style frames with what you've sort of been incubating over the past year or so. And you can see that, you know, development over time as you sort of go through each of these frames that you've, you know, shared with us. So it's really cool to kind of see that whole process visually, you know, over time. And then you just kind of vocally saying it right now, you know, too, on top of it, that like, you know, well, the process matters so much more to me now. And I couldn't agree more. Like, I feel like, when I started out too, it was like, you know, I just need to get this thing done. Like, these people need this thing done and I just need to get it done. So yeah, process was just like whatever the heck existed. Now it's sort of like, well, now wait a minute, let's take some time to actually think about this.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. And that's like, you know, the difference between younger motion designers and older ones. And it's interesting to me because, you know, I grew up into this, you know, this became a job as I like worked into it, you know, because at first I was like, oh, I'm an editor and I do graphics, whatever. But then the whole like being a, you know, an animator or being that as your job, you know, being a MoGraph generalist, as they say, because I don't do cell, I do mostly through 2D, 3D, like 2D design, After Effects, whatever, you know, that realm. Mm-hmm. So there's always animators, you know, hand-drawn animators, character animators, etc. But being this like MoGraph generalist, you know, that doesn't work for Disney, doesn't do Pixar, even though that's what everyone thinks when you say it.
Right.
I do animation. being this like is a thing that, you know, came about like as I got into the industry. I didn't choose it. And nowadays people like choose that, like, oh, I'm going to do that. I'm going to take school of motion courses or whatever. Or I'm going to go to college, you know, some people do that still.
Yeah.
It's intriguing. It's interesting that way. Yeah. Cause, where was I going with that? I lost my thought a little bit, but
process mattering.
Oh yeah. The difference between me who's like gone through all that and like people just starting out in school and like already being like, okay, this is MoGraph. And they already have these like crazy expectations, like, oh, people and like everyone who's so amazing, like it's just a whole different, you know, way of seeing everything.
It is. I mean once you get into it, like you just said, it's so, the expectations I think are just so different than from what is being told at schools or institutions or whatever. You know, everyone kind of forges their own path. I mean, like your story, I feel like it's very common. I mean, I feel like my there's similarities with like how I kind of got into this stuff too. Like, you know, I wanted to do animation ever since I was a kid, but like you just said, everyone was sort of like, well, you want to work for Disney and Pixar. I was like, yeah, that's the goal. Yeah. And like, no, that didn't end up becoming it at all.
Yeah. And that's, you know, cool by all means.
Found, you know, a like, passion in MoGraph. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Very cool. Oh, sorry.
There's one more thing with the frames I wanted to show. I don't know what we're doing.
Yeah,
next,
no, but. Please go.
So
ahead.
We're on number four. If you go to the fifth one.
Okay.
So the big difference here is like, and this is the thing I'm a big proponent of, is compositing. Yes. Go ahead and flip between four and five. So four is the raw C4D render. And then five is like with comping and After Effects. And you just see like everything that comes out of there. Like,
yeah.
Like brightness, you know. And I did do a lot of passes, like, you know, volume emission, you know, depth, etc. Because there is a lot of 3D people, quote unquote 3D people, whatever, that are way more like, you know, they want to see it in the viewport, like they do it on 3D. And I'm way more like, you know, get it close and do compositing in 3D.
Right.
That was a Nick Campbell in Idiom, you know, Graceful Gorilla, like long ago, where he's like, yeah, get it close and then you can fine tune it in compositing it. And I still adhere to that because I'm like, yeah, I'll get it close and then I'll push it, because you can always push it more. And there's things happening here with saturation and stuff that just, you can't do them in cinema. Like,
for sure.
As good as, like, I use Redshift, and as good as those, like, Redshift post effects are, you know, can't quite get it there. So, yeah. And I did a lot, I do lots of sharpening later on, because 3D renders are, like, never sharp enough, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I do a lot of sharpening. I actually use Neat Video Denoiser, and I've loved it because it, like, denoises and, like, sharpens, and it's a really good algorithm.
Very nice.
So I recommend that hugely. And it's really fast in After Effects. So, to the point where sometimes I've rendered, like, it's like I'm rendering this 4K, and I'll actually purposely like keep the samples lower so it renders faster. So it'll be noisy, but this denoiser will take care of that. And so it saves me heaps of time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, life is short, right? We love this. We love doing this art, but like, I don't want to wait for it to render forever. Well,
That's what's so amazing to me when you hear some people who are sort of like, you know, doing projects fully in camera in Cinema 4D and rendering out with either Redshift or Octane. It's sort of like, yeah, those renderers are capable of doing that. It's sort of like, what are your render times though? Because it's probably take a long time.
Yeah. And it's nice to do that because you can see it and interact with it. And, and when you move the lights in the scene, like, oh yeah, this is how it's going to look. But I don't know. It's just, there's always something that I'm not thinking of, or even like when I just do the, you know, in After Effects, shift plus on like the transfer mode thing and cycle through them, I still do that.
Yeah.
Like I just get to surprising places. I'm like, oh, I didn't know that it could look like this, you know?
Yeah.
Like
for sure.
With the render passes, I can just totally change the look of this. And I have like another scene, like let's say a dark version or a cool, like film fade up kind of thing, you know, with it. So it's like surprising. Like I love how, and that's why like, well, I do style frames, but like, you know, I don't adhere to them as intensely. And that's cool that that's your side of it. I like hearing how someone else does it. But for me, I like the random discovery of things like
for
along
sure.
the way to the point. Cause I don't know. In my brain, I'm always configuring stuff. Like everyone who knows me knows that like I'm always thinking of like some new thing for I can build for Boxford, or I can make this like private area. Or
right.
I'm always doing some crazy stuff. So my brain is always configuring stuff and always figuring out stuff. And it's like, I need a break. So I'm like, I want some part of the creative process to be more like organic. Oh, there's that word.
Absolutely.
Organic. I keep saying that.
That's something
that's such a buzzword, but you know.
That's something Liam and I actually were talking about a little bit when he and I chatted too, that, you know, he had put these frames together for Skechers, and he was like, okay, well, this is how we want it to look and feel and everything. And once he started getting into like, you know, Houdini and started to build it out, he was sort of like, well, now wait a minute, you know, like cameras are moving this way or that way. And some of the things that we thought that were going to be a focal point aren't exactly a focal point anymore. So again, like you just said, organically stuff even kind of changed, like as he was, you know, building stuff out too. And I feel like that's just so true of any MoGraph project in general as well. You just think, this is how I want it to perfectly look based on these pre-production and concept development frames. And then all of a sudden everything just like goes to the wind and you're sort of like, ah, well, the camera's moving this way and now we're doing this and the focus is here and not there. And you just roll with the punches about it. And I think that's what's cool about these types of projects is that, you know, you have an idea and you have a vision. It could look the way that you want it to from the beginning, but it could actually look wildly different too. And it could be like a really pleasant surprise.
Yeah, absolutely. totally. And that's cool. Yeah. I watched your episode with Liam and that was cool. It's intriguing that he's doing Houdini and like, I'm interested in it, but I am sick of learning software.
I was just going to say,
like, I'm just so tired. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like I don't want to learn more stuff. I mean, some things are fun. Like actually, like I did, you know, I have an Oculus Rift and I did, Medium. I do want to try Gravity Sketch because I'm not really that good with 3D modeling, but I want to do more of these like techie spaceship thingies that need lots of detail. And I'm like, can I model in VR? Would that be more fun? Who knows? But that's, excuse me. Sorry. It's a little more gestural and like, that's interesting, you know? And locally here, Colin Likes, my friend, she works at Gunner. She's like great with VR and she did a lot of VR stuff for Gunner's Blend titles for 2019 Blend.
Oh, nice.
She's done some tutorials and I think she did like a, she's done some Maxon events talking about that, the process. And she introduced me to Oculus Medium and showed me her process. And that's very insightful and very exciting.
Very cool.
Oh, yeah. But what I was going to say, so the thing about like how the creative process surprises you along the way, the other side of that is like, once again, like the collaboration. So having Boxford here, someone will walk by, look at my screen and be like, oh, like, what if you did this or that? And like another surprising, you know, just a perspective that is literally not in your brain. It's in another person's brain. And it comes in and like, you know, affects what you're working on.
Absolutely.
So that's like a great surprise. And you can do that. You can collab online too. I do love that, you know, different, you know, online communities that I'm a part of or different Slack channels, they often have like daily calls where those that are all working from home, they hang on out on a Zoom call and they aren't talking all the time, but, you know, they're just kind of there. And one person will share their screen and like be like, hey, you know, can you take a look at this? And that, and so you can, you know, it's way more freeform if you're in person with people, but you can totally do it online. And that's
absolutely
about, like cheaper internet and faster internet and all this video sharing. It's all it's easy.
I know. Yeah.
So no, I do love that.
Exactly. Well, to add to that, what you were saying though, too, about like people at Boxford saying to you, like, you know, like, well, where's the sense of scale with these frames that you were building out? It's funny. Like, you know, I feel like you can get that sense of scale from some of the earlier versions of this, right? With like, you know, the debris in the frame and everything, but it's so amazing how just that little bit of like looking into that, like, you know, sphere that there's like this space inside and there's like, you know, some building aspect of it in the middle. It's sort of like, yeah, that really adds like so much scale to it. And so, and yeah, that's just what's really cool about, you know, kind of figuring stuff out in the whole process organically. And then all the collaborative stuff that you just mentioned too. Yeah. I think that's why, you know, these types of projects are really fun too. You know, you learn a lot along the way.
I was totally not thinking about that inside there too. I was totally focused on other parts of it, the animation, the debris, those asteroids or whatever in the background. I was like, that part's done. And then, you know, well, Nick Parenti, who's here at Boxford, kept saying like, I want more in there. I want more stuff in there. He wasn't actually mad, but he does a really good fake mad. It's really funny. But yeah, he's like, I want to see more and more in there. It's my
and
best
it does, and it adds
impression.
So much. It's
I love it, so. It
when you credit when you mentioned him. That, I immediately was drawn to it. I was like, oh God, yeah, that's right. Like it really adds that sense of scale, and it's really cool to hear that, like, you know, yeah, other people around you are sort of like, well, what about this? What if you add this, or what if you did that? I noticed too that the coloring, like between what is it, frames 3 and 4, it went from more of a blue to a purple shift, and I was wondering if there was any design decision behind that as well.
Well, mainly it's due to some other scenes and like the other shots I started making, and because I had more purple, and I'm not showing those because those are sneak peek, like those are hidden, confidential. No, but there's some other shots and there's way more purple to them, so. There are other box orders like, oh, you should probably shift the blue in this more to the purple. So we kind of went into the purple. And like, I ended up like, someone said that some of these frames reminded them of like an older like computer game called Homeworld. I don't know, like maybe the 90s or so.
Okay.
And it started me thinking about like, yeah, like 90s computer games, like Descent and a lot of other games I really liked. And they didn't mean it as in like, oh, it's like bad 3D or old 3D or whatever, but they just meant like something about it. And I think the purple really pushes that for some reason. It gives this weird like it's
nostalgic or something. Yeah.
So, and I'm not going for like real spaceship stuff. I'm going for kind of that hyper real or whatever, like an exaggerated real. And like, I feel like a lot of those earlier video games, computer PC games, I feel like they were like that.
Yeah.
They kind of had a very stylized look more rather than a lot of things now that really go for a realistic look, because, you know, we're actually in space and people know what that looks like, and you know, they do a great job at that. But yeah, I like to really push it a little more hyper real, but not totally. Yeah, it's like, I don't know, I'm just trying to find like a medium, something between like photoreal 3D and cel shaded 3D, like something in between, a little
for
like
sure.
messy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah. Yeah, and I have a couple other bonus frames. If you go to that other second shot frames, go to the no comp one.
Okay. No comp. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So this looks super dark, but this is just like another scene. This is from that same 3D scene, but I put a camera along the rings. And when this is animated, you'll see it actually flying, you know, along the ring. It'll be
very
part
cool.
of that remix. This, you know, was like, oh, I want this, but like, I know it looks like, you know, kind of dull and dead here. I'm like, whatever. I know I can comp the heck out of this and make it more. So this is even more about the like how I love compositing. So if you go to the comp one, you can just see how completely different it is, how much more comes out of there. And you really get the, you know, the lighting from that purple, and there's so much coming out of it.
Yeah. A lot details. Of like ambient. Yep. Yeah, a lot of details, a lot of ambient lighting in the scene. It looked really cool.
And then all with, you know, the render passes. Oh, a thing just fell next to me. That's great. That's intriguing. Wow. Okay. Doing live production. Here we go. I did a lot with render passes and then just, you know, different color correction. It was interesting. I did some interesting stuff using the depth pass to really get the like, kind of what you call it, like the diffused or like the environmental foggy-ish lighting. Mm-hmm. Like on the bottom left of the frame, you know, you're kind of getting that like raised black look, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like kind of what I was really trying to get. And
very cool.
Pull it out with the render passes. And I'm sure I'll put more behind the scenes once I actually release this thing.
I love the behind the scenes stuff that you post on your site, by the way, too.
Yeah.
Like you do a ton of really cool camera animation stuff. And like, I think you posted some stuff about the Logitech thing that you did with IV.
Mm-hmm.
That was really cool to see too. So, you know, to even see your process in the making here right now too, this is just really interesting to get like a sneak peek into like how you're sort of like comping everything together and pulling, you know, this visual together for then even an audio piece that you put together as well. So that's something that's really intriguing to me too, is that you do some sound design stuff in addition to the visual stuff as well. And I wasn't sure if there were certain aspects of your song that like also were driving some of your design decisions, or was it really just like, you know, you had mostly the inspiration from the Dune stuff?
Definitely. Like, so there's a part of the song that just feels more like moving forward or running or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what inspired the second shot. Cause I'm like, okay, I feel like I need a faster moving thing. Cause the wide shot is more slow. You know, like, whoa, space, like this big thing. But I need something that's more like, you know, like Star Wars space battle, right? Very cool. What this shot will be. So it totally inspired me that way.
Very cool.
So yeah, at this point, I think I've got like four or five different shots, and I intend to like just have a low amount of shots and just keep remixing them, you know, crop into different parts. I want to see, because I think the editing part will be fun. I think it'll be, I don't think the editing part will take that long. You know, I think it'll be more of like a, just like a day or two days of doing that. And I'm going to try a couple After Effects plugins like Beatnik and Freak, F-E-R-Q React, that both are like audio driven keyframe generators.
Oh, very cool.
I think Beatnik does like audio driven timing mapping. So you can get the, like the, you know, the robot thing. And then Freak React is cool. Like it has a lot of reactors and you can have different audio frequencies drive, you know, brightness pulses and so forth. So
very cool.
I'm going to try all that. That's going to be fun. And I've wanted to like learn more about those plugins for like VJ work or whatever. So I'm happy I made an excuse to do that.
That was actually going to be one of my next questions for you was, you know, were there in doing this personal piece, you know, were there any specific skill sets that you were hoping to like, you know, practice as part of the, you know, goals of the project? Or was it really just sort of like, hey, I want to create a cool visual for this song that I made?
Yeah. I mean, I like space sci-fi stuff. So I've wanted to push into that. And like, so I don't know if you know this, have you watched the show The Expanse?
I don't believe so. No.
Okay. That's fine. Well, Joyce Ho did titles for that show, and like she's amazing, and I love the titles for that show, and I've watched it a million times, and like a lot of work she does just feels like kind of like space cool, you know. But but it was like stylized. It had like this time lapse thing with the planet and stuff. So I just saw that. I'm like, I want to get more into like that experimental, you know, a little bit, you know, space reality sci-fi stuff. But I'm like ultimately, you know, career wise, I do want to get into title design more. And I'd love to do titles for a show like, you know, one of the new Star Trek shows or like Foundation, you know, the Foundation titles by Imaginary Forces were amazing. You know, that'd be a dream of mine to like do sci-fi titles for a show or a movie for one, like a big sci-fi franchise or something. So like, I just thought, well, I want to get more into that. But I'm not that interested in positioning myself as like a photoreal 3D space artist, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There are plenty of people that do that, like my friend Billy once again, and like the people who do like the, you know, the visual effects for Star Trek, Star Wars, etc., etc. But like I like that, and I want to learn how to like light a planet the right way, whatever. But I don't know, I want it to be more, I don't know what it is, whatever it is, I just need it to be me. But I do like doing stuff in space. I love sci-fi, you know, robot cyberpunk stuff, but those tropes are so like saturated that I'm like, I gotta do it my own way, you know,
for sure.
But I gotta be me, you know, so I gotta figure out what that is. So really, this is just me just trying to be me and whatever that means, you know.
I love it.
So yeah, so at the expense of maybe some shots of this will be like not look very photoreal or might seem, you know, even a little sophomoric in like the 3D approach, but I'm going to use it as a fun concert visual moving kind of thing, and I think it'll turn into something. And the fact that someone thought like, oh, it looks like Homeworld, it looks like that old game, I'm like, that makes sense. Like I always think of Descent, you know, it was like a 3D, like a first person shooter in a spaceship, and it was one of the early kind of things like that. And yeah, that's kind of like where I've ended up, even though it wasn't inspiration initially. Mm-hmm. That wasn't my something I would look for as a source. It right. ended up where this has ended up. So I'm really happy.
Definitely.
That. Yeah.
And what would you say some of the challenges and or rewards of working on this personal piece have been so far?
Let's see. Challenges. Well, calling a shot done, you know, perfectionism, et cetera, of course.
Yep.
Being okay with it, like being close, but not perfect, I guess. You know, just having a render and being like, I don't want to render this again. Like, I don't have time to render this again. And just like accepting, like, this is the approved shot at this point. That's a challenge. Those are mostly, you know, self development stuff, like accepting, you know, this, that, you know, recognizing it, you know, I'm having, you know, believe, you know, trusting my taste to know, like, okay, this isn't crap. This is like worthy of production, of putting out there in the world. But also being like, you know, like, they'll endlessly, there's some new cool render on Instagram that's like, oh, my stuff looks like nothing compared to that, right? But just accepting that discrepancy and being like, well, this is what I feel good about. Like, you know, if I look at this, it feels good. if I only feel crappy about this when I compare it to so-and-so's work or something, then, well, that just like, that is, it doesn't matter. You know, it's not that they're better. It's just, this is different. And I feel good exactly. about this and they feel good about that. And I don't know. It's just not apple. It's not apples to oranges. It can't be, you know,
100%.
I drive myself crazy with that. So yeah, that self-development was like a big part of this. Other than that also, I mean, that was with the song too. So I'm like, I want the song to be done. Right. So that was a challenge. And then once again, always stepping back and be like, am I having fun doing this? You know, there's no reason to do this if I don't want to have fun. That's why, like, I didn't want to make a huge, like 5-minute short film with, you know, a lot of different shots. I wanted to just remix 4 or 5 shots. Cause that's fun. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to do. And I actually have done that before. For instance, so Nick Parente, he did the music video for Flamingos' Daymaker song.
Yes.
Yeah. And I did a scene from that. I did this like infinite tunnel thing. So that scene appears twice in the music video. And the second one was like a remix of it. And it was fun. I just sort of like cut it and like time remapped it and did some different color effects. And like, that was a really enjoyable process to be like, to take the stuff work I had already done and just remix it and do something else with it. So that's a lot of why I approached this way. Cause I'm like, I want to do this, you know, kind of like the way I did the Daymaker thing and just remix the shots, you know?
That's funny say that now that you like remixed like one shot into a different shot on that project too, because I love his music. I love a lot of chill hop stuff. And totally. So when I saw that you worked on that too, I was like, oh, that's so cool. So now to hear you even say that, you know, I just wanted it to be fun and remix like something else, and that's how you're applying it to this personal project too. That's a kind of a refreshing thing to hear that like it's sort of like, I don't need to think up another, you know, like entire concept, like, you know, this concept works. So, you know, like, yeah, let's remix it. You know, I think that's like a cool approach to a project.
Yeah, totally. And like, I like live concert visuals. I've seen Sigur Rós like every time they performed in Detroit. And then I saw Porter Robinson, like his side project Virtual Self. He did like a DJ set here in Detroit. And that had a lot of like, you know, the music gets pretty intense, you know, like drum and beat, like, or drum and bass, like, and, but there's a lot of remixes of like anime clips and, you know, other animations and pretty simple animations, you know, like, how could you do that? But it was great how it would react. You know, you'd see the same animation over and over, but one might have this, you know, chromatic aberration pulse, or it'll just flip, or the timing will move. And I was like, yeah, you really feel it. And I like that. Yeah. It's crazy. Like, I used to like not like house music. I used to hate it. I used to be like, it's too repetitive. I don't get it. Like, it's so boring. It's so boring. And now I really weirdly love it. And I love the progression, you know, because someone else recently like was like, oh yeah, it's interesting. Like, you listen to like a house song, progressive house, and like you'll hear, you know, you realize that like it almost seems like the same thing, but you listen to the beginning and the end, like, oh, it's a totally different sound. It got to some totally different place, right?
That's true.
It's like a weird advancement of me that like, I don't know. I you know, because I used to think like, oh, you know, house electronic music, whatever, like, or EDM, you know, people like to be like, oh, EDM isn't music, whatever. And, you know, I wasn't like that totally, but like, I kind of have gone like, oh no, it's nice to work within the confines of a 4/4 beat and just be like, okay, you know, let's make this easy. We don't have to, let's just have this constant beat. Let's see what we can do within it. It's very interesting.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. And if you don't mind me asking too, how did you get into music? Because, you know, when you had said earlier, you know, like I'd started out kind of doing this mix of like, you know, video and editing and MoGraph stuff, you know, starting at Comcast, like, were you introduced to some of this music and sound design stuff that early on, or you just kind of explored it on your own over time?
I mean, so I've done a little, like, I'm not trained in any instrument totally, but yeah, you know, I took piano lessons as a kid. I've learned a little bit of the Chinese violin, the erhu, learned instrument stuff a little bit. So yeah, I have like a little bit of music theory in there, but, mainly I've just had friends that would use synthesizers, and I would love the sounds it could create. And I, more than anything, I just wanted to get some physical, you know, synthesizers, turn knobs and like make crazy sounds. It was like a fun, like off the computer, different thing. So it's entirely like, I was interested in the hardware, like synthesizers look cool. And they sound cool. And it's really nice to turn some knobs rather than punching keys and using a mouse. And really, that's what got me more into this. You know, I got a few little cheap ones. And then, I don't know, like, once again, it's like organic discovery of something creative. know, it's a creative shift, you know, away from the computer because you're using physical controls. And like you, like, I don't know, for me, you know, like I never knew what I was going to get. Like sometimes the synthesizer, you wouldn't hear anything because I had the cutoff or something turned too high. And I'm like, did I break it? Like, what? I can't hear anything. What is going on? So it's like a very interesting discovery of like, and sometimes you make stuff that is the worst sounding thing you've ever heard that just like murders your ears.
That would be
it's
me.
Like, yeah, it's crazy that it's possible though. It's like, this thing is unrestricted. Like this is ungoverned creativity. This thing could explode my speaker if I accidentally overload something, you know? And that's fun. Like it's very, yeah, unsanitized creativity. It's very raw and yeah, it's like Mad Max with music. So
I feel like there's a common theme throughout our discussion here of like, you know, just like this very organic exploratory approach to creating, which I'm sure is true of so many, you know, other individuals in the industry and types of projects and stuff too, but it's just really nice to hear it. Just like you speaking about it, like, you know, like let's, you know, throw the spaghetti at the wall. Let's see what sticks, you know, like, it's refreshing. Yeah. It really is.
Good. I'm glad. I just, for me, it's gotta be a little messy and a little wacky. Yep. Cause, you know, like I get a lot of my ideas like late at night when I'm trying to sleep or I don't know, just in a weird place you know, using, you know, certain substances, you know, it happens. So it's just like, I don't know. It's like, you can plan. And yeah, like, you know, I'm all for like planning and production, especially when it comes to client projects. Like you need like that, but for you need some element of randomness or something, you know?
Totally.
That's why I love like the Cinema 4D MoGraph tools and other, you know, randomization tools. You know, I just love, generated, randomized stuff. It's cool.
Definitely.
Can help you get to different places. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I love your take on that. I think it's great. You know, as someone who, yes, I feel like does a ton of planning, it's a great reminder for projects to not go so hard on that, you know, to really just let things organically come to what they're supposed to be or what they might turn into be. Because you never know what you're going to get in the end.
But your process intrigues me too, of course, because like, you know, I need people like you to hold me to some sort of standard or some sort of schedule or some sort of something. Right. And that's good. And yeah, I don't know. But yeah. It's like a little bit of both, you know, I like that
for sure.
That's the thing. It's like, another difference between, you know, I guess, you know, industry veterans and students and so forth, you know, students will start out, you know, whether they want to be freelance or whatever and read the freelance manifesto, which is full of great information and ideas or, you know, learn the process of certain other people who teach and so forth. And yeah, before they've developed their own process, that's good. You should follow someone who knows what they're doing and has achieved results that you're interested in having similar results. But over time, it's like, you know, it just it becomes like, well, you've like you reach a point as an artist where you will not grow and you will not like advance anymore until you find your own process.
For sure.
You know, eventually you will use up everything you can out of other people's processes and it just won't get you where you want to be. And you'll either change careers or you'll have to be like, okay, then that's it. Like not that you've learned all because you keep learning all your life, but you learned everything you can from a certain level within the industry. You know, you've learned all the basics, you know, it's like, no, I have to find a new thing. I know it's annoying because you always think like, oh, everything's been done. Look on Instagram, everything's been rendered. Like, who am I? Like, I can't do any of this, but like, you can, like, you can, like, anyone, even if you use the same tools, Cinema 4D, Redshift, Houdini, whatever, you know, the Grayscale Gorilla packs and stuff, like, yeah, you start with all the same ingredients, but I don't know, like, the mind is endlessly full of ideas that have not been done yet, and it's maybe something very subtle.
For
like,
sure.
You know, it may be something that at first glance, it's like, oh, there's another space scene, another cyberpunk scene, another, you know, anime girl drawn, you know, with some crazy high-tech headgear, but like there could be something unique about it. That's your take. And that's kind of what you got to look for, a little like micro differences. You know?
Exactly. Well, and to what you said earlier, you just got to do a remix, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You got to remix it.
You got to remix it.
Yes.
That's all you got to do. Yes. Well, this has been so much fun chatting with you about this project and learning a bit about like, you know, your processes, you know, involved in the projects and the type of work that you do. What was I going to say? If people want to learn more about like the stuff that you're working on and what you're up to, you know, where can people find you nowadays?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my website is juliecraft.work. And then, you know, and then my Instagram is Craftmatic. It's been that for a long time. I used to play StarCraft and that was always like my username. So Craftmatic with a C and a K at the end, CraftMaticK. And that's my Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, you name it. That's all that. And then Boxfort, you can find us at boxfort.work. And also the Instagram for Boxfort is Boxfort Detroit Instagram. Our Twitter also is Boxfort Detroit. And yeah, there's also like MoGraph Mondays on Instagram and on Twitter also.
Very cool. Very cool. All
my brands.
All your brands. They're all out there now.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Julie, you know, for coming on the show again today. You know, it's been just such a pleasure speaking with you and talking to you about all this creative stuff. You know, we'll share some links to some of the tools and resources, studios and stuff that we've mentioned here for our audience to check out.
Yeah.
But that about wraps it up for today, everyone. You know, feel free to email us at styleframesatpod@gmail.com. You know, we'd love to hear what you think of the show. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, and also come connect with us on social. You know, we're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you again, Julie, for joining us. And we'll see you guys in the next one.